The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
In today's program, we're going to talk about how the California wildfires might have impacted your retirement portfolio, even if you're thousands of miles away from California.
We're also going to take a call where a lady wants to know, does rental real estate play a role in her retirement planning?
Yeah, stick around. We got a great program.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today as we talk about financial issues. Both my co-host here and myself are both financial advisors. Certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays helping people like yourself plan their financial futures, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with today, or you do things on your own, or you're just getting restarted in your life, whatever your place is right now, we appreciate you considering us another source for valuable information and your financial advisors on the air.
So, or if someone's just trying to pitch you a product.
That never happens, Ben.
Just trying to tell you why this thing is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Why do we always refer to sliced bread as a great thing?
Oh, you know why? Because it was actually, it was a big thing when sliced bread first came out.
Oh, and you could buy bread that was pre-sliced?
Was pre-sliced.
Well, I think it's time to maybe
use some.
Like, yeah.
I'm showing my
greatest thing since the iPhone or something.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're a financial program.
There we go.
If you got to just even want a second opinion or want some advice on something, you'd like to.
Yeah. Or if you're retiring whatever. And you don't know whether you have enough money, or if you're going through a job transition, you have an IRA or 401k and you're wondering what to do with it, give us a call.
Yeah. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Now, before we head into the calls, which you will hear in a minute, Pat, I think the last couple weeks was again a prime example of why people should not be overweighted in their own company stock.
Again.
Right? Because look at if you work for a company and you have a 401k, let's say it's a larger company that's publicly traded and the company is doing reasonably well, odds are you have more stock in that company than most people, right?
Yes. Then the average person would ever go out and purchase.
Yes. That's a good way to. Then the average person would, or any advisor would recommend that the average person should go out and purchase.
Yes. Right? And as an example, if someone comes into our office and says, okay, I've got $600,000. I have $300,000 in this single company stock. And I don't care what it is. I just think back to 98, 99 when I had all these people from Lucent Technologies where the stock was up, I don't know.
It fell 85%, I believe is what it was.
Where we were diversifying, trying to diversify. All I asked them is, if you had met me for the first time and you brought in $600,000 and I told you to take half your money and buy a single company stock, would you work with me as an advisor? And they always said, no, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And I said, well,
that's your portfolio.
That's your portfolio.
Now, look, diversification is not designed to make you wealthier. It's designed to protect what you have and maintain your standard of living. So, look, if you're 32 or 42 and your company's doing great and you know you've got more risk there than, you know, maybe it would be prudent if you're older, fine. Just understand the risk. But as you're starting to approach retirement, it's a different stage.
So, yeah, if you're 55 and you have 40% of your portfolio in a single company stock, I don't care what it is. We can go back in history and look at all of the companies that did great.
Now we're going back 2 weeks.
Yes.
Northern California. What happened in Northern California?
Huh? Well, we're pretty close to it. The fires.
Yes.
Right? And if you've been watching the news at all, what did we know about the fires? That Pacific Gas and Electric, there's an investigation, multiple investigations by multiple agencies right now that are trying to determine whether Pacific Gas and Electric's power grid system, the lines, were the cause of some of the fires.
Right. So PG&E's stock a few weeks ago was trading around $70 a share. It dropped to below $50 a share.
$5 billion plus in market capitalization was wiped out in a relatively short period of time. And this is a utility stock.
And this is why, while the broad stock market was climbing.
But it's a utility.
So it's not in a downturn. This is when a typical stock has continued to climb slightly, and it falls more than 25%.
Yeah. They used to call these widows and orphan stocks. Electrical utilities and telecommunications used to be considered widows and orphan stocks.
What's fascinating, so we're bringing this up because Northern California, where the fires were, they're the main utility player and they're a huge employer. And we have a lot of clients, frankly, that either PG&E retirees or current employees.
And there's nothing wrong with PG&E as a company.
No, and nothing wrong with owning some of their stock for a portion of the portfolio. But think about it. If you're marching into retirement and the majority of your portfolio was in PG&E stock, and some obscure thing like a fire gets blamed, and now your stock falls. Let's say you had $700,000 in your 401k, yeah, which is you're going to build your whole retirement income on that, and that $700,000 falls to $500,000.
Your retirement view of retirement has
not
changed.
Only that, your retirement income might have been infected quite a bit.
Correct. If you were retired and you had that much in a single
Or were planning on retiring anytime soon. And now you might be in a situation thinking, I'm going to be having to work longer to make that up.
So state it again. Why do you diversify a portfolio, Scott?
To protect what you have. It's not designed to get you wealthy. It's designed to protect what you have.
And it's a risk mitigation tool. That's what diversification is. Risk mitigate.
And you
mitigate risk.
Every advisor talks about it, right? Of diversity. I don't have all your eggs in one basket. Well, why? I mean, what if you have one really good egg? What if you work for Apple?
It might be truly.
Or Google.
Look, good.
Netflix.
Good.
Tesla.
Good. But there will be a day.
As there is in every other company.
There will be a day.
It's market saturation. No company grows forever, right?
Yeah.
It's maturity. And the closer you are to retirement, the more important it is for you to have some, not have everything in that one golden egg. Because that's the funny thing is there'll be a day. That one egg never doesn't stay golden forever.
There will be a day. Every company.
Every company.
Kodak, the darling of the 70s.
Was. Are they still in business?
I actually don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. But this is an example.
Yeah.
Things get displaced by technology.
Or forest fires.
Or natural disasters. Absolutely.
Or any other natural disasters.
I was just reading this week, one of the big hedge fund managers made huge bets in Puerto Rico, calling it the Miami, the new Miami is what he called
it. Everyone's fleeing Puerto Rico before the hurricane. They were fleeing Puerto Rico.
Three years ago. The new Miami is what he called Puerto Rico.
Might have called that one wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
Look, and if you were betting and you say, I'm going to take 5% of my portfolio and bet on a particular area.
Go for it.
And, you know, a lot of times we see people as they approach retirement, they'll take the majority of their portfolio and be prudent with it. Right?
It's not unusual for someone to take 10% of their portfolio and play with it.
5 or 10% and say, look, I'm going to be prudent with the vast majority because this is where my retirement income is going to be based upon. This is my nest egg. This is what I'm planning on having my spouse survive from and my children's inheritance. I'm going to be prudent with these. But this 5 or 10%, I'm going to take some risk on some things.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy this or buy that. Fine. That's great.
Okay.
As long as you get a...
Yeah. Build the fortress around yourself and your family first.
Yeah. That's why, you know, so when I looked at, obviously a lot of people have been impacted by the fires. I've got friends that have been impacted by the fires.
We have clients that have been impacted by the fires.
But it's not just the people that are even in that region that have been impacted. When you look at PG&E stock dropping from $70 a share to $50 a share.
And everything else.
And the impact it has on people that had nothing to do with the forest fire. Just investors. So it's just a reminder of why it's so important to maintain some diversification.
Especially in your own company 401k.
Especially. And people, the company they work for,
it feels safe.
Yeah, it's all these people you've been working with for years.
You get to help
build it. It's exciting. I was talking about how great things are going. The new plans have taken over the world, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of the program. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And let's start with the phones here. Let's start off in Fort Collins, Colorado with Mark. How are you, Mark?
Great. The previous lead-in is perfect for the question that I have. I'm not ready to retire, but I'm always interested in my retirement options. And let me describe the situation. I've been employed for quite a while, and over the many years, my retirement plan has morphed and changed. And now I'm faced with a plan where a third of my retirement account is in a defined benefit account, which okay. has some protection from the federal pension benefit guarantee.
Yep.
Two-thirds of it is a defined contribution account, which doesn't qualify for those protections. Now, as I consider my options going forward, I'd like to tell you what I decided to do and then get your thoughts about the pros and the cons of that.
Perfect. Okay.
So as I think about these two portions of my account, the one-third, which is a defined benefit, I'm thinking of taking that as an annuity directly with the company that I'm currently employed with, so they would hold the funds and pay me the annuity out of the trust. The other two-thirds I'm thinking of taking as a lump sum and then purchasing two separate annuities from two different other insurance companies on the side. And I will tell you that current rate that my current company is paying is quite nice. It's about 5.9%. And so I will be subjecting two-thirds of the retirement nest egg to about a 0.9% penalty. So I will lose 0.9% by going to other companies where they're only paying about 5%.
In other words, the payout in the private market is almost 1% less than the payout.
That's correct.
And,
yep.
and so,
exactly.
So, Mark, when you determined this, did you use a net present value calculation based on your life expectancy to determine the internal rate of return on the?
Or did you say what percentage would I need to earn on this lump sum to provide X dollars a month?
No, the first.
Okay, you used the net present value.
Yes.
Okay. My gosh, you're pretty good at this.
Yeah.
Actually.
So first of all, let's talk about two different camps here. So the first is. And not all companies offer a lump sum. It sounds like your company offers a lump sum and you want to take a monthly annuity option.
Does it affect any of your other benefits by taking one or the other, like health insurance?
No.
And
okay.
sometimes the lump sum is so large that I remember years ago, frankly, we could take lump sums. This was back Pacific Bell back in the day. There was a window we could take a lump sum of a pension and go out and buy government bonds and have a higher return. Higher monthly income and maintain your principal.
Yeah.
So you'd be a fool to take a monthly pension, right? If you could say, I could just take these dollars, go buy government bonds and have my principal to boot. So you'd be either uneducated or untrusting or a fool to take the monthly pension. Now, that doesn't exist in most environments and doesn't exist today. And you're correct to say if I want to look at a guaranteed monthly payment for the rest of my life, The defined benefit plan in your company is going to offer, will always offer a higher rate. Not always, I should say that.
Most of the time will offer a higher rate than,
today's market,
than
sure.
a commercial annuity.
Yes.
So you have a normal life expectancy, I assume. Do you think you do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And are you married?
Are you married?
Yes. And these are both calculated with 100% survivor benefit.
Perfect. Perfect. And what other assets are there? So let's give me the total amount of income that this will provide.
So this will meet my non-discretionary needs.
Got it. And how much other income is how much is the other assets worth? Liquid assets outside of your primary residence.
Well, investable assets outside of my primary residence. The lump sum of these two accounts is about 20% of the total net worth.
Oh yeah.
All
okay.
Right. So now I'm feeling more comfortable for a minute I was. At the beginning of the call, I'm thinking, why would you want to annuitize all of your retirement savings? But it sounds like this is a quarter of your savings, really.
That's correct.
Yeah, and you're going to get a higher rate on this than you'd go out and buy commercial bonds in the marketplace.
Correct.
That's actually, yes, that's true.
How old are you, Mark?
60.
So the one,
and I assume you have no debt.
That's correct. Well, my house.
The one,
One second. How much do you owe on your home?
$200,000.
And do you have any of your money in cash or short-term bonds?
Yes.
Are you going to pay your home off when you retire?
It will depend on my tax situation at the time. I've been questioning that as well.
And is most of your assets inside qualified plans?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
The one thing to keep in mind on these commercial annuities that you're going to be looking at buying, these, and essentially what Mark's looking at doing is this isn't like an equity index annuity that we rail against. this is essentially buying like a private pension where you take a lump sum, you give it to an insurance company in exchange for a monthly payment that you cannot outlive. And so what Mark's going to be doing is giving it to the insurance company. It'll pay him X dollars for his life. Should he predecease his wife, it'll continue to pay during her life.
So, Scott, would you not consider in this situation, and remember for the rest of the listeners, we by and large are not fans of annuities, mostly because the average consumer can't tell good from bad.
That's right. Most can't tell good from bad, and there's a lot of bad products out there.
There's a ton of bad products
out there. I have a feeling Mark can tell the difference.
Yeah, I mean, he's the first person I've ever met that on the radio show that actually did a net present value based on his life expectancy.
I think you're right, 22 years. Yeah.
I assume you're either an engineer or in a highly technical field. Would I be correct?
Yes.
I think I would shop a little bit for a variable annuity with a guaranteed minimum income benefit on it. Do you have heirs? Okay. Do you have children?
Yes.
Pat brings up a point. Sometimes you could actually get a higher payout on some of those products.
Or even if you took a lower payout with the chances that you actually are going to have some principal to go on. So he's okay. Bright enough. If you were sitting in my office.
To understand the products.
And we very, 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 very rarely use these guaranteed minimum
I think
income
we did.
Fit years ago.
I think last year there was 3 or 4 in the firm out of 4,300 clients. That's
yes.
How rare it is.
It's pretty rare. But they're out there, and they could make some sense. So
okay. It
may make sense for you to actually do some research, which I think you'd be able to tell good from bad, and look at a highly qualified company in terms of its credit rating and look for a variable annuity with a guaranteed minimum income benefit. Or what they call lifetime benefits. Sometimes they go by different
names.
Just
start off some of the big no-load firms and see what they have to offer.
And see what they have to offer. That's, okay. I think,
yeah.
That's
a no-load policy.
That's the direction. I'd be more inclined to take a smaller return than the 5%.
It would still give a guaranteed lifetime. They're a little complicated products, but you can still get a guaranteed lifetime income.
And have the chance of having some principal left.
I would look at that. Because one of the things you're doing right now, when you are buying these annuities, you're essentially... It's like buying long-term bonds in today's world, right? Rates are low. But, of course, Evan's been saying for 5-6 years that rates are going to rise.
But the
long-term rates are still low. Who knows, right? Nobody can predict those things.
The benefit of a variable annuity with a guaranteed minimum income benefit is if you or your spouse predeceases a normal life expectancy, then you actually didn't give those dollars up to the insurance company, which you would if you bought a lifetime annuity. If you live too long, that's the life insurance company's problem.
Yeah. Yep.
But what a great, you've done some research. I'm actually very, very impressed.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, Mark.
I do what you've suggested.
We like your thinking. Glad you called. And by the way, we see, you know, if you've got some financial plans you've created for yourself and you want to run and buy somebody, we're just a perfect opportunity. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean. 1-888-2-HAN. S-O-N. Let's talk with Ward in Denver. Ward, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. Hi, good,
hi,
good
Ward.
Day.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, okay, my situation is this. I'm 85. My wife passed away about a year and a half ago, and I'm downsizing and sold my house, and I'm going to have about $140,000 in cash. I'm still working. I hope to work another 2 or 3 years, and my health is good. The problem I have is, what do I do with that cash? Going to the stock market might be a little risky right now because at some point in time, I think it's going to really, really go downhill. I've been talking about perhaps buying some gold coins, and I just really need to know what your suggestion is. What should I do with that money?
Ward, what money do you have outside of this $140,000? I assume that when you downsize, you're paying cash for your new home. Is that correct, or condo, whatever it is?
No, I'm getting a I'm getting a loan. No, I know I'm getting a loan. It's only going to cost me about $12,000. And when I say 140, I'm talking about 152 minus the 12 for the down payment.
How much is what's the cost of the home you're buying?
It's a downsizing to a townhouse. It's going to be $250,000. And boy, Denver is that's not a lot of money in Denver anymore.
Yeah, no. And do you have money outside of this $140,000?
No, not really. Maybe $20,000 in automobiles that are paid off. That's about it.
Okay,
and when you let's say you retire in 3 years
at the age at the young age of 88.
Yes.
How much income will you have?
Well, the only income I'm going to have, at least at this point, unless I can save more money, the only point I'm going to have is Social Security of about, probably at that time, probably about $50 to $100 a month.
Okay. And how much are you earning at your job now?
It varies a little bit. I'm on commission. I would say somewhere between $50,000 and $80,000 a year.
You're amazing.
I know. I'm like.
Are you looking for work?
I'm like, I love it.
I want to hire him.
Work on a commission. It's like going out and swinging every day.
I want you to come and work at Hanson McLean. I hope I've got half the energy.
I know. That's really great.
That's good for you.
Actually, at 85, I'm very, very young, 85.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, commission job at 85.
It's still 85. So here's what I would do with that. I would actually put it in the bank. That's what I would do with it. I would go to the website bankrate.com, and it will give you a list of high-yield money markets that are FDIC-insured, and you will go online.
Money markets or just savings accounts. Some have high savings accounts.
That's correct. And
Goldman Sachs now has online savings accounts.
And they're 1% plus on these things. In many cases, and it's 100%
liquid. You don't want to lose these dollars.
You cannot risk.
But what I'm afraid of is losing them through inflation. I mean, inflation right now, as you know, is low, but at some point in time, it's going to probably get quite high.
But gold does not, you know what? It's in spite of the marketing, the stuff that you've heard on the radio ads the last decade, gold is not always a good hedge for inflation. It's just not. If you look how gold performed during the 80s, remember how high inflation was during the 80s, gold, it hit a peak. And what year was it hit the peak? It hit a peak and it declined more than 50%, 60% while inflation was roaring its ugly head. So gold, the challenge with gold, it doesn't necessarily provide a hedge against inflation.
Yeah.
And that's not every time period it has.
Yeah. And more inflation... Well, a concern for many should not be the biggest concern for you. So, I would
maintaining the same standard of living.
If you were sitting in my office.
It sounds to me like Ward never really wants to retire.
Correct.
He's going to retire when suddenly life tells me he has to, right?
So, Ward, if you were in my office and you said, Pat, I want to give you this $140,000 to invest, I would turn around and on my computer and go to bankrate.com and tell you exactly where to put it. And it wouldn't be with my firm. Because... You shouldn't be taking any risk with these dollars, right? You have no other source of income. This is it, right? This is it. So
yeah.
That's what I would do, bankrate.com.
Yeah.
And then you're going to find
I've got one other quick thing, though. I'm hearing that rather than just maybe gold bullion coins or something like that, I'm hearing that some of these like MS63, 64, $1 gold eagles, or even the silver dollar coins in a higher
Ward. Mint. Ward. Yeah. Don't buy gold in any form. Don't buy any form of gold. None.
You can't afford to lose these dollars.
It's too much risk. Do not buy any form of gold. Silver, platinum, any sort of commodity. Take these dollars and put them in a high-yield money market or savings account. That's it. Now, you can take my advice, our advice, or not, but that's what I would do. And you could try to talk me into why you should buy gold, and it won't work. Put it in the bank.
Totally agree with Pat on that. And wish you well, Ward, and sorry about being widowed at the stage in life.
And God bless you.
I know. Sitting there.
85 years of age, commission sales guy. I wonder what he sells.
I don't know. That's pretty awesome.
It is great.
Yeah.
Call me, Ward. I'll probably have room here for you.
I'm in a coaching program with this guy. He's 73 doing this program, and he's 3 years into his 25-year plan.
Oh, yeah.
And I find him very inspiring because...
3 years into a 25-year plan.
Yeah. And he talks about his future being bigger than his past. And here's Ward, 85 years old, still out there.
Hustling. Yep,
but bad every day.
Hey, real quick, before we take a break, want to let people know, for those in Northern California, we had hundreds attend our retirement workshops this last week, our retirement transition workshop, 7 personal decision points for retirement transition, last essentially workshops of the year. And we have them coming up in the Denver region this following week. So if you are in the Denver region, Wednesday we're in Cherry Creek, Thursday we're in Broomfield, Saturday Highlands Ranch. You're going to want to go to HansonMcLean.com for all the details. HansonMcLean.com. It's going to be great. Actually, we had a couple weeks ago, we were out there, Pat, for Terrell Davis, a week and a half ago. Terrell Davis, we did a similar kind of a retirement workshop, which was very well attended. And you're going to want to, if you're within 5 years of retirement, you'll want to join this. So again, HansonMcLean.com for the full details and to register for these upcoming workshops. We're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Love to take your call.
So, Scott, our government is hard at work. Passing legislation or considering passing legislation. And, you know, as bills morph their way through the sausage-making thing we call Washington, D.C., they take on new lives. And one of them...
Yes, and you'll find, by the way, during this program, during our show this in 2017, we have not spent a lot of time talking about different tax bills.
Oh, and the reason is... The reason is because until they're in their final form.
What's the point?
Unless you are a lobbyist or you're working for a large corporation that's trying to favor some sort of legislation and you're that will be beneficial to you.
We see a final bill.
Then we'll talk about
that's actually getting seriously debated. Then we'll talk about it. We haven't been there. So there's all these ideas and you get crazy throughout the year. Some of the things that we had heard about and I'd heard some other talk shows getting spent a lot of time on thinking from an individual standpoint. You're sitting there planning your financial future. Don't waste any time on some
proposed legislation
until it comes down in the final wire.
Yes. Yeah. It's
because it's such a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not going to just slip through like some small things can.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. Tax reform's
Both
sides.
It's
highly political.
So these, I read two articles this week, and they actually, in my mind, I connected the two of them. One was this accredited investor standard, which they lowered the accredited investor standard a number of years ago.
Which essentially means, and it might seem strange, it might seem unfair at first blush. It's basically that for certain financial products that aren't publicly traded securities or open-end mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, these private placements, the investors have to meet a certain level of either net worth or income level before they're allowed to invest.
And the reason is they have inordinate amount of risk as compared to
other investments.
Many other investments. Not all other investments, but many other investments. They're illiquid. They lack visibility. Yeah, oftentimes they have unaudited financial statements. There isn't that research done in the founders of the company. So
it's kind of like, let's say your neighbor teams up with another person. They say, we're going to go create these new widgets of some sort, and we're going to sell these widgets. We've got a great distribution thing online, and we're going to team up with Amazon because they're going to be the greatest thing for us. And so they say, we need to raise $1 million to make this happen. And they approach you and say, hey, how would you like to invest $100,000 in this?
And you say, oh, I know my neighbor, but what if your net worth is $125,000 and you took the money out of your home to purchase it?
So your neighbor raising the money, he's prohibited from raising funds from people that are not what are considered accredited investors.
And that is to protect the consumer or the less financially savvy.
Yeah. It just, I've always kind of interesting because just because somebody has money does not mean they're financially savvy.
They might have been very good at what they did.
Or gotten lucky.
Or, yeah.
One of those two.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, oftentimes we see people
maybe they were born on third base.
But, you know, most people, frankly, that I see that have substantial wealth are not necessarily really savvy financial people. They were good in their career or worked for a company that did.
They're not going to have anything to do with you after that comment. Most of your friends that have substantial wealth and you just got on the air and told them that they were not financially savvy.
You know, but look.
Yes.
You know,
so there are many industries.
When you get when you get down and dirty with somebody and you're sitting talking about it, how many times when someone finally admits, say, you know, I don't really understand the difference between a stock and a bond.
Yes.
And this is someone that's got more than $1 million in savings. Don't really understand the difference between a stock and a bond. And I bet there's a lot of people listening right now saying, you know, I don't really quite.
I mean, I might have been the greatest landscaper in the world and ran a great landscaping company and not have a good understanding of the capital markets.
Correct. Why would you?
Yeah, yes. Much like I, understanding the capital markets, have no understanding of landscaping.
You think you do?
No.
How hard can it be? You just put the plant in and put some water on it.
Yeah, well. Not,
right?
Not, yes. Okay. So they have, over the years, loosened the accredited investor standard by lowering it, which has provided an opportunity for the scammers to use social media in order to raise money for these things. So there were two articles I read this week. One was the accredited investor standard being lowered, and this actually leads to more senior financial abuse. It's proven. Every time they've lowered it, the people that have money are the ones, especially seniors, get it taken away from them. Read another article that said 450,000 financial scams are operating right now on social media. Many of them to raise money.
450,000.
When I go on Facebook and I'll look at Facebook sometimes, you'll see like this guy has a ice chest with a bottle opener and a beer keg, and then it has speakers in it, and then it does all this and this and this.
I want one of those.
And they say, we're raising $50,000 to bring this to market, become a part of it. And there's a number of different platforms that allow for that.
This came from the Small Business Act or something like that. Yes.
So what they're doing is social media has actually given these scammers a great platform, along with the change in legislation, which means they're actually not breaking the law.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, because they're exempt. I think it was under $1 million raise.
Yeah, it was small.
Under $1 million raise that was exempt from these other rules.
And it used to be $5 million. It was what it used to be. So the point being is when you're on any sort of most social media and they're pitching this great thing, just be careful. I've actually seen some cryptocurrencies now being pitched on social media.
Oh, boy. That's a whole other topic, which we'll have another day.
That is a completely different topic.
Cryptocurrency, coin offerings, and all that other stuff.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the upcoming shows.
Yeah, 1-888. Yeah, because it's more people are going to get lured in and sucked in.
Yeah, we've talked about it in the past, and since we've talked about it, it's actually gotten worse.
My son brings it up all the time. You know, Dad, I should have bought it when I said I was going to thinking about.
Well, you should have gotten straight A's, son. You would have gone to a nicer school. Is that what you tell them?
Hey, you punk. If I wanted your opinion, I'd give it to you. No. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Let's go to Colorado Springs. Talk with Tina. Tina, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I'm calling about retirement and real estate. Those two things. My husband and I are in our mid-50s, and we've bought and sold a lot of real estate in our life, and we currently own a home in Colorado Springs and also one in Florida. And so what my question is around retirement and real estate. How much real estate should we buy? Is there any locations you guys really like as far as buying real estate? And how do we figure that out for our retirement plan?
Great question.
So when we talk about real estate, in my mind, it is just an asset. It is an asset, much like a stock is an asset, or a savings account is an asset, or Elvis collectible plates are an asset. It is an asset. So when you ask the question, how much should you buy? It depends on what else you own, because we believe in a diversified portfolio, which is what you're doing is you're trying to mitigate risk, as we talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah. If I can pile on top of that. So some assets are totally passive as far as from an investor standpoint. If you buy, for example, an S&P 500 index fund,
Standard & Poor's will never call you.
Have money in your 401k, there's essentially very little work for you to do. When we're owning real estate, which can be a fantastic retirement income tool, but I think you're talking about residential real estate primarily, there tends to be some sort of labor involved, whether it's physical labor or mental stress. There's just some work involved. So there are some people, and we've known this a long time, some people come to us and say, you know, I've owned rental properties my entire life. I'm done. Is there a way we can structure my retirement income where I never have to deal with another rental property in my life, right? So sometimes we hear those sort of things.
Yes.
And then sometimes there's someone like yourself, like, look, we've had experience owning real estate over the years. We understand real estate. It seems to work out well. And that sounds like that's where you are. Is that right, Tina?
That's correct.
So these both of these homes you own, are either one of them a primary residence?
Yes. The Colorado Springs property is our primary. The second property in Venice, Florida is a vacation rental.
Got it. The home in Colorado Springs isn't really part of a retirement picture unless you plan on downsizing. A primary residence we consume. So you plan on downsizing.
Mm-hmm.
To Florida?
Well, yeah, I guess that's where, you know, the picture takes a turn. We bought this property because we knew we weren't going to stay in it very long, probably 10 years on the outside, just because it's too big. It's 4,000 square feet, you know, and plus we bought it as an investment. Typically what we do is we invest in the property, take advantage of the, you know, capital gains, live in it for 2 out of the 5, and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll rent them out. So we rent them out for maybe 2 to 3 years, live in them for 2 to 3 years, and, you know.
So how did this work out for you during the, and if you've been in Denver, you didn't have the huge run-up in the 2000s like others, but how did this strategy work out for you during the downturn?
Well, what happened is we had about 5 properties, rental properties in the same area. So we were able to control some of the pricing, and we sold up the top.
Oh, good for you.
All right.
So we were pretty lucky in that regard. We were, you know, it was dumb luck on our part. It wasn't, you know, because we were so brilliant.
So
what counts too, right?
So your question is, how much property do you need, or what? So,
well, yeah, I mean, my question is, does it make sense for us to buy more property? Because we've got some cash on hand. My husband's, you know, itching with this cash in his hand.
Uh-huh.
He wants to buy some more property. And I'm, like, not too excited about it.
Do you have other investments in 401k or IRAs? Or?
Well, yeah, we do. We have 2 investments, Fidelity and another local bank that does some of the, you know, investing local stuff.
And what's that approximate value?
That's about $250 to $275.
Okay, between the two of them. And how much cash do you have for another property?
About $75.
Okay.
So you'd be talking about, what you're talking about is not really, you're talking about putting some money down and then borrowing money to acquire another property right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Or putting, I hate to say this, but all our eggs in one basket.
Yeah, well, your eggs aren't
retirement.
Aren't all in one basket. You have $275,000 that isn't invested in real estate. Your primary residence, you've got some equity, I assume, in that. And you have some equity in the home in Florida, I would hope. Purchased them.
Vacation rentals, by and large, are not the best investment.
That is correct. But so what drives the decision is the cap rate. That's what drives the capitalization rate. So to ask us, is real estate make sense or not? Real estate isn't like a share of stock where they're all, you know, if I buy Apple, I buy Apple.
Yeah.
Real estate is, when they say it's local, it's hyper-local. So does it make sense? Well, it depends on the capitalization rate. If the cap rate is, let's say, 5
your
or
return.
Above,
yeah,
the
your,
return.
Just the yield on it, essentially.
Then it may make sense. In the greater Denver area, the cap rates are actually relatively low right now.
The lower the cap rate, the less attractive the investment is because it's, your yield is low. So, and this is a conversation I had with my 21-year-old son who lives in Denver, who I had this conversation with him last week. And I said, pay attention to the cap rate, because if the house goes down in value by 20 or 30% and the rents remain stable, then your cap rate essentially on your invested capital is still the same. So would I be in a hurry to buy real estate in this marketplace with these low cap rates?
So the challenge you've got here, you're looking at putting $75,000 down. If you can do a 15-year mortgage and have it fund, the rent fund that mortgage so that at age 70 you have a nice income stream.
Yes, that's what we're looking at. That's exactly what the plan is.
Maybe. But the concern we have is, you know, the next downturn, and nobody can predict when they're going to come, but they come and they will come again. The next downturn, that $75,000, you're highly leveraged now. So that could go to
zero quickly. Or negative in a relatively short period of time.
Sure.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't invest, because that may not happen for a year or 2 years or 2 weeks or 5 years. As long as the leverage isn't too far out there, which means I would put at least a third down, which puts you at a home price at about $200,000, $225,000. And then I would make sure that any income that is derived from that pays the mortgage payment. And I would make sure that I had ample assets to back it up in the place
the
that empty for 6 months, or if the roof goes
all those
kaboo-y.
Things that happen.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And so is there a place I can go, a website or something I can go to figure out what the current cap rates are in the area we're looking to invest in?
Not that I'm aware of. So in order to figure out that calculation, just look up how to calculate a capitalization rate, cap rate.
Okay.
And you can find it if you just type in cap rate calculation on Bing, you'll find it.
Pat doesn't like the fact that there's, appreciate the call, Tina, good luck. Pat doesn't like the fact that there's one company with so much power. Do you actually use Bing?
Yeah, I use Bing and Google just because it's Google's so good. But I always feel bad. Like when it comes in there and their Google ads, and right below it is the regular website, I never click on the ad because I don't want the people to pay for the ad if I was.
Yeah, okay, I do that. It's interesting. We're kind of like, man, I love Google. I love Amazon. Some of these companies, it's like, man, they have a lot of power in my life.
That's exactly it.
Right?
They know a little bit too much about me.
Yeah. When we know the ads that get served up to me.
Oh, constantly. Constantly. Yeah.
I was reading the local newspaper on my iPhone the other day, and an ad for, it was in the financial services, like trying to recruit me.
Yes.
I'm like,
did you respond?
I did. Maybe it's a better job than Hanson McClain.
This is Scott's last day. Got an ad.
You always got to look at these things. You never know what might come up.
Yeah, I was surprised by that on the local newspaper. They're serving up customized ads.
Yeah, customized ads.
Yeah, which is probably coming from Google,
of course. Yeah, I know exactly. Anyway, 1-888-2 Hanson is the number here. Let's talk to Joe in Eureka, California. Joe, you're with Hanson McClain.
Joe, one of my favorite places in the world, Eureka, Trinidad State Park. Beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, the Carter House Inn down there at the water.
Okay, here we go. And by the way, for the rest of the, Eureka is in the, it's not the end of the earth, but you can see it from there. So it's in the, right at the northern tip of California, right near the Oregon border on the coast.
It's beautiful.
And it was a huge logging area one time.
Yeah, about 90 miles south of the border.
Yeah, yeah. And was one of the, at one point in time, was the one of the wealthiest cities in California.
Is that right?
Yeah. Lumber?
I would say so.
Lumber,
there's a lot of, lumber. Timber, yeah.
Anyway, but enough of the geography, Joe. You had a question for us.
It has a different industry today, by the way.
But. Yes, they do. They're growing things, but it's not timber.
Yes, let's just leave it at that.
Unfortunately, yes. So my question is, I've been in a 401k with my employer for, 20 years or whatever, however long it's been. So I'm debating, I'm wondering if I should take, not move money, but instead of just going into a 401k, if I should move that, not move money, but change that to a Roth IRA.
Got it.
Basically,
does your employer offer a Roth option?
I don't know that. I haven't asked.
The majority of plans now offer a Roth option, so you can still do the 401k. The nice thing, it's yanked out of your paycheck before it drops into your checking account, right? Because it's more work once it comes into the checking account to make sure it gets saved, and that's where people tend to.
How old are you, Joe?
I'll be 62 in a day or two.
Okay, so you can actually move it to a Roth IRA, convert it over to a Roth IRA after age 59 and a half. You would move it to a Roth and then, or to an IRA and then to a Roth IRA.
He's talking about his contributions.
Oh, he's talking about his contributions.
Yeah, just the contribution. I'm not really worried about moving the money I have.
Well, you could actually get to your contributions another way, but right.
I know exactly where you're going. If this is the objective, you take the 8,000 or whatever from the
thing every
401k,
year.
Move it to the Roth. It would accomplish the same objective.
It would. We could get to the same place. What's your approximate income, family income?
50 grand.
Are you married or single?
My wife passed away a year and a half ago.
No, I'm sorry about that.
Did you apply for Social Security? Are you? But you're still working.
You're still working. Here's what you
haven't applied for Social Security.
No. Here's what. How much do you have in your 401k?
Probably 300 grand, right around there.
And will you have any sort of pension at retirement?
I've got a Teamster retirement that'll bring probably if I did that now, I think it would bring me about $8,500 somewhere in there.
So here's if I did it now. Here's what we have to kind of look at whether if we want to look at a Roth. The sales pitch on the 401k when you were younger, Joe, is probably something like this. Hey, put money in this plan. You're going to get a tax deduction today while you're in a higher tax bracket. And then when you retire, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket so you can pull it out at retirement, right? Now, the Roth is kind of the option. The Roth, you would say, wait, I'm going to forego a tax deduction today while I'm in a lower tax bracket, betting that I'll be in a higher tax bracket in retirement. If tax brackets don't change, it's 6-1, half a dozen the other.
The way I've been hearing it lately on any of your shows or other, any other shows is, just to have them both.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's best to have them both.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So,
kind of work off each other or something.
How
much are you putting in? Yeah.
Probably 15%.
So if you had that 15% going to a Roth rather than the pre-tax, you'd be further ahead. Only because that you're not getting a tax deduction today, so that 15 grand that would be in your plan at the end of the year is going to be completely tax-free, whereas 15 additional grand in your existing
15%, his income's 7,500, Scott. He said 15% is what he's putting away.
15%, excuse me, 15%.
So do you owe anyone any money?
No.
Your home's paid for?
Yeah.
I'd do the Roth.
I would first see if your company, if your employer offers it.
Right.
Then I'd do it through there. Otherwise,
do you plan on living in the state of California for the rest of your life? Do you plan on it? I know lots of things can happen.
Yeah. I probably will, even though I would see many benefits to not.
Okay.
If I move to a state that doesn't have income tax, do I have to pay California income tax?
You do not. No. But if you were to move to a zero tax state, you would have been better off doing a deductible contribution.
In other words, if you can get the tax break from California today by doing a traditional 401k, and then you move to a tax-free state like Nevada or Florida or Texas, and you withdraw the money, then you essentially avoided sending Jerry Brown those dollars.
So I would actually look into it. I think I don't think he could hurt himself doing it. And it's just a tax diversification technique that you're going to possibly use in the future.
But you want to keep here's what you want to do. Because you're getting a tax break right now. For every $1,000 that you're saving in your 401k, it's really equivalent to about $800 in spending power in the future, because that tax break you're getting today is going to be you're going to have to pay the taxes in the future. So if you said I'm gonna cut my contributions in half, and let's say that $300 a month that you were putting in your 401k, you put that $300 into a Roth, that'd be a great move.
Right.
That would be a great move.
Because you'd have more net spendable income in retirement by doing that.
Right,
spendable income. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I'll have to look into it then. I'll start checking into that.
Yeah, and if they do the Roth option through work,
and then Joe, when you retire and go to collect Social Security, you may want to start on your wife's survivor benefit before you're out. That's just an aside.
Put that in again.
So if you go to collect Social Security, depending upon your age that you start it, you're qualified right now to collect a survivor's benefit on your wife's Social Security.
Except
you're still working, so there's no benefit in doing it. But if you quit working today, you would actually go onto your wife's, assuming she had a benefit, until you were age 70, and then you would look to go on your own. And that way your benefit goes up.
Yeah, definitely something you need to consider when you go to retire.
But I'm just throwing it out there because a lot of people miss that in financial planning, is that Social Security benefit with a deceased spouse is the survivor benefit.
I've never heard that one before.
There you go. It was worth the price of admission, Joe.
All right.
I appreciate the call.
Well, thanks a lot, fellas.
All right. Thank you, Joe. And, you know, the Roth, Pat, there's a lot of calculators and stuff on Roth. They rarely take into consideration the state income taxes.
Yes.
And California, the state income tax, the top rate in California is 13.3%. Now, most people aren't at that rate, but there's a lot of people at 9.9%.
Yes.
A lot of people at 9%.
Yeah.
Colorado has high taxes. So other states with high tax. So if you're in a state and your plan is to retire in a tax-free state,
well, then the Roth may not make any sense at all. In fact, probably, especially if you're in a high tax state.
Yeah. I mean, it might be the worst thing you could do is take.
Yeah.
Why give the state 5 or 10% of your income when you could avoid it? So when the source income tax, that thing died years ago. So now when you move to a new state, there's your retirement plans are only going to be subject to the taxation of that state you're residing in, your full-time residence. The only thing there's a couple little nuances. If you had some qualified stock options from a previous employer, that appreciation that you had while you were in that state that you worked, that state could still come back and bite you. So there's still a couple times when the previous state can come back and bite you. So if you're in a situation like this, just remember you want to talk to a tax advisor before you make a big...
So in having these conversations, you think that there should be an idea of bringing some simplicity to the tax code?
Of course there should be. Hey, we're about out of time. Hey, if you're in the Colorado region, we've got retirement workshop this week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Go to HansonMcLean.com. We're out of time. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.